Have you ever found yourself wide awake at 3 in the morning, replaying a conversation in your head? That tense meeting with your boss where you wanted to ask for a raise but ended up just nodding along? That argument with your partner about finances that spiraled out of control? That moment you saw a coworker cut a corner and you said, "Nothing." We've all been there. These are the conversations that keep us up at night. The outcomes of these discussions can shape our careers, our relationships, and our happiness. The book, Crucial Conversations, gives these moments a name and, more importantly, a playbook. A crucial conversation, according to the authors, has three distinct features. The stakes are high, opinions vary, and emotions run strong. And because of that combination, we tend to handle them, well, terribly. We often fall into what the authors call the fool's choice. We believe we have only two options: either speak the truth and be brutally honest, risking the relationship, or stay silent to keep the peace, swallowing our true feelings and letting problems fester. We think we have to choose between being honest and being liked, but this is a false choice. The entire premise of the book is that there is a third, far more effective path: dialogue. So how do you create dialogue when your heart is pounding and your mind is racing? The first principle is to start with heart. Before you even open your mouth, you have to get your own motives straight. Ask yourself a simple but powerful question: what do I really want? What do I really want for myself, for the other person, and for the relationship? Think about that coworker who keeps missing their deadlines, forcing you to work late to pick up the slack. Your immediate impulse might be to go over and say, "Your laziness is ruining my evenings." But what do you really want? You don't just want to vent, you want to have a productive, reliable teammate. You want the project to succeed, and you probably want to maintain a decent working relationship. By focusing on this higher-level goal, you shift your entire approach from winning an argument to solving a problem together. Once your heart is in the right place, the next and perhaps most important step is to make it safe. People can't engage in healthy dialogue if they feel threatened, attacked, or disrespected. When people don't feel safe, they resort to silence, withholding their true opinions, or violence, which can be anything from sarcasm and eye-rolling to outright yelling. The book gives us two conditions for safety: mutual purpose and mutual respect. The other person needs to believe that you care about their goals, mutual purpose, and that you respect them as a human being, mutual respect. If you see that safety is at risk, if someone is getting defensive or shutting down, you need to step out of the conversation, restore safety, and then step back in. The book tells a story about a manager who needed to discuss a sensitive hygiene issue with an employee. Instead of just blurting it out, he started by establishing safety. He said something like, "I'd like to discuss something that's a bit awkward, and I want to be upfront that my intention is to help, not to embarrass you. Your contributions to this team are valuable, and I want to make sure nothing gets in the way of your success here." By starting this way, he established both respect and a shared purpose, making a very difficult conversation possible. But what about our own emotions? Often the biggest obstacle isn't the other person, it's the story we're telling ourselves. This leads to the next core idea: master my stories. The authors present a simple model called the path to action. First, we see or hear something. Then we tell ourselves a story about what we saw. That story creates an emotion, and that emotion drives our actions. Imagine a colleague walks past you in the hallway without saying hello. You might tell yourself a story: "He's ignoring me. He must not respect my work." That story leads to a feeling of anger or hurt. The next time you see him, you might give him the cold shoulder. But what if you told a different story? "He looked really preoccupied. I wonder if he's dealing with a crisis at home." That story creates a feeling of concern, and your action might be to check in and ask if everything's okay. The facts are the same. He walked past you. But the story you tell yourself changes everything. The key is to challenge your own narratives, especially when they cast you as a helpless victim and the other person as a malicious villain. Okay, so you've got your heart right, you're focused on safety, and you've challenged your own story. Now, how do you actually say the thing you need to say? For this, the authors provide a brilliant five-step tool called STATE. It's an acronym. S stands for share your facts. Start with the least controversial, most objective information. Facts are the foundation of a safe conversation. Not, you're always late, but the report was due at 10 and it was submitted at 4. T is to tell your story. This is where you explain the conclusion you've drawn from the facts, but you do it as a story, not as a certainty. Use phrases like, the story I'm telling myself is, or I'm starting to wonder if. This sounds much less accusatory than stating your story as a fact. For example, when the report came in late, the story I told myself was that you might not see this project as a priority, which made me feel a bit worried about hitting our overall launch date. A means ask for their path. After you've shared your side, genuinely invite the other person to share theirs. I'd really like to hear your perspective on this, or what's your take on what happened? This shows you respect their view and are open to dialogue. The second T is to talk tentatively. Present your story as a story, not as a stone-cold fact. Use cautious language. I'm beginning to wonder if is much softer than it's obvious that. This invites discussion rather than defensiveness. And finally, E stands for encourage testing. Actively invite opposing views. Make it clear that you want to hear the full picture, even if it contradicts your own. You could say, do you see it differently? I really want to understand if I'm missing something. Let's put it all together. With that coworker who missed the deadline, a STATE approach might sound like this. Hi, Pat. I wanted to chat about the marketing report. I noticed it was submitted yesterday afternoon instead of the 10 a.m. deadline. Honestly, the story I started telling myself was that maybe you're swamped or that this project isn't at the top of your list right now, which made me feel a bit worried about hitting our overall launch date. But that's just my story, and I wanted to hear your side of things. How do you see it? Maybe I'm missing a piece of the puzzle here, and I'd love to understand what happened. See the difference? That's not a confrontation. It's an invitation to solve a problem. The final step in any crucial conversation is to move to action. All this great dialogue is pointless if it doesn't lead to a clear result. You need to decide who does what by when. Document it if you have to. This turns a good conversation into a great decision and ensures accountability. In the end, Crucial Conversations is about more than just talking. It's about transforming your relationships and your results. It reframes these scary, high-stakes moments not as threats to be avoided, but as opportunities to deepen understanding, solve persistent problems, and build stronger connections. The tools in this book empower you to step up to these moments with skill and confidence. So the next time you feel that familiar dread of a difficult conversation looming, take a breath and ask yourself, what if this isn't a battle to be won, but a puzzle to be solved together? What do I really want, and how can I make it safe for us to find the answer?